Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the one assumption underlying most economic theory sounds like a pretty dubious one, that people behave rationally. Well, the winners of the Nobel Prize for Economics announced yesterday are from a branch of the subject that considers people's actions in the real world. Game theory considers that people's decisions are affected by what other people do or what people think they might do. Since coming to bear in the latter end of the last century, game theory has been used in everything from nuclear deterrence to labor negotiations to card games. You may remember it even from the popular Russell Crowe film, A Beautiful Mind, a few years ago. With me now to give us the lowdown on what game theory is in light of the Nobel nod is Alvin Roth. He's the Gund Professor of Economics and Business Administration at Harvard University. Professor Roth, thank you very much for joining us. I almost called you Professor Gund. Hi.
There you go. Hi. I'm glad to be here.
So one winner of the $1.3 million prize was an American economist, Thomas Schelling. The other was a mathematician, Robert Allman from Israel. They both won for their work on game theory. So give us 101. What is game theory?
Well, game theory is the part of economics that talks about how people make decisions when their decisions matter, not just to them, but also might have some feedback into the environment. So when you go buy hamburger at the grocery store, your decision to buy hamburger or not doesn't change the price of hamburger. But if you're General Motors and you decide to sell more cars of a certain sort, that might change the price.
So game theory was cited in deterring nuclear attacks between the U.S. and Soviet Union during the Cold War because they let each other know they could launch a counterattack. And you talk about the General Motors big footprint on, you know, a buying decision. In a way, it sounds more like common sense than a formal economic theory.
Well, lots of things that are true have elements of common sense in them, and lots of common sense is true, and the job of science is to sort those out, find out which parts of common sense are true and which aren't, and which things that are true aren't common sense. So there are some subtle things that game theory lets us know, and there are also some obvious things that it lets us understand how they work and how they interact and how they lead to non-obvious things. So think of game theory as the mostly the mathematical language in which we talk about how people interact.
We can take your phone calls on game theory at 1-212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Alvin Roth from Harvard. This is the topic of the Nobel Prize for Economics. So does game theory hold that people act rationally or irrationally?
Game theory, helps study how people act, and you can study how they act when they're acting rationally, and you can study how they act when they're acting irrationally, and how rational and irrational motivations and behaviors interact.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So, for example.
Okay, for example. When you look at a online auction house like eBay, there are going to be experienced bidders interacting with first-time bidders. And part of the job of an auction house is to let those people interact with each other smoothly and get, you know, reasonable outcomes without putting anyone at unreasonable risk. And one of the things that game theorists do is they study, for example, how the rules of the auction affect people's behavior. And so So, for example, I did a study that involved the difference between the way eBay runs its auctions and Amazon and Yahoo and other internet auctions run theirs. What you can find is that small differences in the rules, you know, create large differences in the way people behave.
Do you have an example?
Yes. So eBay ends its auctions at a fixed time. There's a clock, and when the clock strikes the designated time, the auction is over. Amazon has auctions that also have a clock time at which they'll end, but the auction isn't allowed to end until 10 minutes have passed without a bid. So if you put in a bid a second before the scheduled end time, the auction doesn't end. It goes on another 10 minutes. Well, in eBay, you see lots and lots of bids are piled up at the end.
Right.
People do what's called sniping. In Amazon, you see hardly any of that, and that has to do with those particular rules of how the auction ends.
I also read that Stanley Kubrick based the film Dr. Strangelove on an article by Schelling, an economics article.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's true. I think I've heard it also.
So how much do governments use game theory today?
Well, you know, I think that the conception of how to conduct strategy and negotiations are very much influenced by game theory. I don't know that government negotiators need to be game theorists, but particularly, you know, Schelling in particular wrote a lot about mutual deterrence. And there was a great deal of thought that went into, does the world get safer or more dangerous when you have a first strike capability that might not survive a surprise attack? You know, that was a game theoretic line of Cold War reasoning. You know, suppose, does the world get safer if your enemies think that you have these devastating weapons, but that if they acted fast and first, they could destroy them? And you say, well, that doesn't sound good. You know, maybe, and that's why second strike capability started to be talked about, things like that. You say the way to keep things safe and make sure no one wants to you know, start a surprise nuclear war is to make sure that, to remove the temptation that they could win by being surprising.
That was the mutual assured destruction theory.
Well, no, that's a little different than that. Mutual assured destruction, well, maybe it's the assured part of that. But it's not enough to have enough bombs to make the rubble bounce, as they used to say. You have to make sure that threat doesn't cause your opponents to think that they'd better act fast. You know, so weapons can be destabilizing, right? Mm-hmm. If you see me moving my troops to the New York border, you might think it's, you know, time to attack Massachusetts.
Interesting. And on almost the opposite end of the same thing, I gather that the Oslo Peace Accords in the Middle East are even a good example of game theory at work, because both sides made small concessions because they were keenly aware of what the other side might do in response. Now, that process collapsed, but were they consciously using game theory in those negotiations? Have any idea?
You know, people have written about that. I think I think you're talking about uses of game theory that are at the sort of conceptual level. I think that in negotiations of that sort, the details, the maps, the deployment of troops on the ground, you know, rise to the fore, and the general game theoretic considerations are only in a background sort of way.
This is 93.9 and AM 820 WNYC, WNYC.org. We're talking about game theory, which considers that people's decisions are affected by what other people do or what people think they might do. The theory behind the Nobel Prize in Economics winner's work, that prize awarded yesterday to American Thomas Schelling and mathematician from Israel Robert Alman. And my guest is Alvin Roth. He's a professor of economics and business administration at Harvard. And our phone number, if you want to talk or ask anything you've always wanted to know about game theory but had no one to ask, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Dan in Lincroft, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Somewhat over 40 years ago, I was an industrial engineer working at Griffiths Air Force Base in Rome, New York. And I'd had a little bit of game theory in school, and I was asked about when to assign snow removal people to shifts. The idea was is that nature is the player we're playing against, and it's trying to put snow in the worst possible time for us. And we want to put the people on shifts so we don't have to pay too much overtime. And it turned out to be a very simple problem, and we assigned the people in the daytime. And it was just a straightforward application of the simplest possible mathematical game.
Any reaction?
Well, you know, game theory has been used for lots of things. You know, in New York City now, I was recently involved in helping redesign the high school school choice plans. And, you know, I think a lot of what game theory is used for is designing processes that put people in places, you know, labor market clearinghouses, school choice systems, snow shifts.
Dan, thank you for that example. And according to the Nobel Prize website, game theory asks the question, why do some groups of individuals, organizations, and countries succeed in promoting cooperation while others suffer from conflict? Did Schelling and Alman, a mathematician and an economist, actually help to answer that question?
Well, they helped to answer it in very different ways. Alman, you know, the particular paper that he was cited for, develops a mathematical framework for showing all the ways in which cooperation and conflict might play out. And what Schelling did in his 1960 book that was cited was he basically said, you know, when you have many possibilities of how things can play out and you understand their structure, now you're going to need empirical input to decide which of those things will happen of all the things that could happen. So he was a very early advocate of what's called, of experiments in game theory and of gathering empirical information of an appropriate sort. So I think what you have in this prize is an important theorist and an important early empiricist.
So you might someday wind up with a mathematician winning the Nobel Peace Prize, not just economics prize.
I have little insight into the Nobel Peace Prize.
Wayne in Cranford, you're on WNYC.
You're the only guy who would tackle this kind of thing, Brian. I love it. I run a labor union of the AFC at a college, and what I'll do is I'll use rudimentary game theory to come to what game theorists call a saddle point. That is, where we're ultimately going to end up. And what I'll do is I'll say, okay, you're going to make these moves, and I'm going to make these moves. So why don't we cut to the chase and get to this point, save a lot of time and nonsense? And it works. I mean, I get good agreements, and I get them fast, and I avoid a lot of conflict. And it's just getting everybody to be smart about it, but the basic structure is right out of game theory.
You sound like you have an enlightened administration also.
I am, but I've also read von Neumann and Morgenstern. I also work as, you might call it, an advocate planner on environmental issues, and ditto. I decided it just took too long to have a lot of conflict, and why don't we just do the same method and sit down over a cup of coffee and let's see what really would happen. So we kind of simulate what's going to happen if I do this and if you do this and so forth and so on. So, again, cut to the chase and let's get here.
That's known as backroomism. You got to get the rank and file out there. Yeah, you got to get them riled up.
Have the professor explain what a saddle point is, and I'll let you guys talk.
Thank you for your call, Wayne. Do you know what a saddle point is?
I do indeed. I don't think it makes good radio talk, however.
You can't do a 15-second soundbite on saddle points?
So a saddle point, the saddle on a horse is something that, the place where you sit, it's the highest point in one direction and the lowest point in another direction. And when people were talking about two-person zero-sum games, that was a good way to think about what an equilibrium was, what a stable outcome was.
So I'm glad you're worried, though, about what will make good radio, because, you know, that helps make you a good guest. But I like that. Stephanie in Iceland, you're on WNYC.
Hi, it's Islin, actually.
Islin, I'm sorry.
Anyway, I have a question about moral hazard in game theory. Are economists using moral hazard more in their studies of human motivation?
Well, moral hazard is a consequence. So moral hazard, the idea of moral hazard comes up in insurance. And the question is, supposing you were able to get 100% disability insurance, the reason insurance companies don't like to offer you that is they worry it might subject you to moral hazard. You might feel that with 100% disability insurance, maybe you
you'd
behave differently. You'd take risks, or maybe you wouldn't hurry back to work, things like that. So the way they resolve that is they're only willing to give you, you know, partial disability insurance, and it'll have a long deductible period and things like that, so that they're hoping to insure you against the risks that you already face without causing you to take new risks or behave in a way that will cause them to have to pay for risks.
Right, but it seems to me that it's an enormously useful concept in studying human behavior, because it seems to me that most people don't have the theoretical understanding of mathematics to work out anything like game theory on a formal level. But moral hazard is something that they use all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Brian earlier on asked whether this was simple common sense, and I think there are aspects of, you know, where moral hazard shows up that you know, if you understand that you're not going to be liable for the consequences of your actions, you might behave more recklessly than if you aren't. At that level, I think it's a very simple and powerful concept.
Stephanie, thank you for your call, and I'll never mispronounce Islin again.
Sorry.
Except maybe when I'm in Islip, Long Island. But thank you for your call. We have a few more minutes with Harvard Economics and MBA professor, or Business Administration professor, Alvin Roth, as we talk about game theory, the central theory in the work of the Nobel Prize for Economics winners announced yesterday, they being American Thomas Schelling from the University of Maryland and an Israeli mathematician, Robert Alman. Schelling, by the way, said game theory can be used to discipline a child. How would parents apply an economics principle to that?
I suppose they might think about not making threats that they're not willing to carry out, since that will hurt their future credibility. Schelling was very concerned with credibility.
And as we mentioned earlier, game theory was popularized in the 2001 film A Beautiful Mind, which featured the American mathematician John Nash, played by Russell Crowe. Nash won the Nobel Prize in 1994. That was for game theory, too?
Yes. Yes, Nash shared with Reinhard Zeltan and John Harshani for developing basic equilibrium ideas in game theory. And Oman and Schelling have just now been awarded the prize for their work that helps make clear how conflict and cooperation play out together, are two sides of the same coin.
So does game theory remain controversial in mainstream economics?
Oh, on the contrary. I think game theory has become the language with which economists talk to each other about all sorts of things. I think it's a very mainstream idea in economics now.
Rich in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Okay, hi you guys. Thanks, Brian. I'll give you an example of game theory, and you tell me if I'm right. The profits and pitfalls are happening right here in this city. You have Mayor Bloomberg trying to protect one of the most vulnerable places in the world right now with a war in the background, and he has to make these moves, and he has to make these decisions based on his game theory. And at the same time, you have his opponent in a mayoral race who questions his game theory and can turn that against him. It's almost a catch-22 for the mayor right now. And had this not been an election period going on, the mayor's moves may never be questioned. Am I correct?
Game theory, lots of things can be modeled as games. So I think that you're quite correct that the mayoral race and also maybe the war on terrorism and the defense against terrorism, each of these things can be thought of as games. I'm not quite sure that I understood your analysis in the brief time you had to give it.
Right. Well, he was basically doing a political analysis, and it was self-explanatory, so we'll leave it there, and people can decide for themselves whether they agree with it. Dorian in Manhattan, you're on WNYC, and we have about 25 seconds for you.
My quick question, then, is whether game theory has been applied to the new forms of citizen journalism. Lots and lots of people taking lots and lots of photos of disasters and sending in their words and whatnot. Has anybody tried to apply game theory to that and see how that might affect how citizen journalism works?
Okay, the line was so bad that I actually had trouble getting that. Did you get it, Dr.
No,
Roth?
No, I couldn't hear.
He was basically asking if game theory can be applied to citizen journalism. I guess he means blogging and sending photos, but we'll have to let that sit. 15 seconds. How important is the Nobel Prize to economics as a whole? Does it influence the field?
You know, the Nobel Prize normally is given to developments that have already occurred. So game theory was already important in economics in 1994, and it's still very important today. So I think the Nobel Prize is important to economists. I mean, we like to have our work appreciated, and it's nice to see our colleagues get prizes. But on the other hand, game theory will not become more important in economics because of the prize. The prize recognizes the fact that game theory is important in economics.
Alvin Roth, Economics and Business Administration Professor at Harvard, thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.